Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines and with the news, but who aren't necessarily politics wizards. I'm Julia Bell, and usually I kind of sit here on my own and strip everything back and make it all make sense, hopefully. But today I'm bringing you something a bit different, and I'm extremely excited to do that. I'm bringing you an episode where I popped through to Mary Black MP's office in Westminster and chatted to her for over an hour. And I had actually reached out to her team via different channels a lot to just try to get her on. But about a month ago, someone got back to me and said, okay, she'll come on your podcast. And in case you don't know, Mary was elected to Parliament as an MP for the Scottish National Party in 2015. And notably, she was the youngest person to get elected since the 1830s in Westminster Parliament. The 1830s. And at the time, she'd been working in a fish and chip shop while finishing off her degree at Glasgow Uni. So that was obviously when she caught my attention along with everybody else's. And I thought, God, it takes a hell of a person to do this so young. To do it at all, but to do it so young particularly. And if you need your memory jogging as to the kind of the political picture in 2015, oh, it was such, honestly, it was such a simpler time if you think about it now, but the Conservatives won that election with David Cameron as their leader. And this was the kind of bubbling up time of like, shall we have a referendum about our membership of the EU? If we could just go back in time and say, please be nice to each other. But until that point as well, the Conservatives had been in a coalition with the Liberal Democrats since 2010. Remember, with Nick Clegg as Deputy Prime Minister, literally feels like ancient history now. And he works for Facebook at this point, so the world has moved on. But in 2015, Cameron didn't really need the Liberal Democrats to prop him up anymore. But what also happened in 2015 that vastly differed from the 2010 general election is that the Scottish National Party stormed onto the scene. They'd won 6 seats in 2010. They won 56 seats in 2015. So that electoral map of Scotland went from being a bit of a mishmash, really, of like Labour red and Lib Dem orange, to becoming an almost complete sweep of SNP yellow. I caught wind of Mary Black at the time, obviously because she got a lot of media attention, but also because she was this kind of unfiltered, fired up, furious political mind. And she was just quite different from the sort of, if you think of an MP in your head, you probably wouldn't picture Mary Black. And I liked that. And she won her seat in 2 elections since then, so 2017 and 2019. So she has been in the game for years now, but still she sort of sticks out, which I enjoy. And the thing about this episode is, I've been wanting to meet her anyway, but I really wanted to do an episode for you where I got to the bottom of what it is to be an MP. How do you get that job? What does your life look like, you know, when you're doing that for real? How kind of high school playground is Westminster? How much money do you get? And I knew, you know, these kinds of questions, I knew that I wanted to get a hold of someone who would actually answer them and be straight up in doing so. So who else but Black? Just to say before I get into it, this is not a campaign for you to become an SNP supporter. We actually didn't really talk about policy at all. I am completely neutral about how you guys should swing. I truly don't mind or care about that. And if you're registered to vote in English or Welsh or Northern Irish or international elections, you can't vote for SNP anyway. This podcast is much more about the job of being an MP and how that looks and how it feels. So let's get into it. Please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you never miss future uploads. And if you could do a kind thing with just 2 seconds of your time and give it a 5-star rating if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts so that other people can discover it too. Okay, this was me and Mary Black in her, it was quite a hummy, kind of echoey office. So apologies for that, but the conversation makes up for it. This is the question that everyone asks you at the start of a podcast or interview.
Yes.
So you ready? The question that you've been asked a million times. How old were you when you became an MP?
So I was 20 when I became an MP. Mm-hmm. And that's that.
Great. And was it a kind of spontaneous decision, or was it this sort of well thought out plan, like you always knew you wanted to get into politics?
No, not in the slightest. So for me, what had happened was, it was about 2000, 2012, I think, that SNP announced they were pushing for a Scottish independence referendum. And I remember at that time, me and my dad talking, and both of us realising, if there's one time to get involved in politics, it's this.
Right.
This is the first chance we've had in Scotland to actually change things. Mm-hmm. So I was hooked. And for the next 2-3 years, we just campaigned non-stop, me and my dad out most nights of the week, chatting doors, standing on high streets with leaflets, getting into conversations. Ended up, me and him printed out a list of 5 YouTube videos, like one for the economy, one for pensions, one for health, and we shouldn't be telling you this. So we printed out these links all right. on a page, and me and my dad printed hundreds of them and sat cutting them up into wee strips.
Right.
And in every coat pocket, we had these slips so that when we get into a good conversation, we could go home, watch that, take that away with you. And I remember I was getting picked up for a night out when I was like 18 or something, and steaming, right, but sitting going, what are you voting to the driver? And the driver's going, I'm actually undecided. And the two of you sat outside my house for like half an hour just talking and talking. I gave them this slip, and that was that. And then about a year into me getting elected at Glasgow Airport, get in a taxi, and the guy goes, it's you!
Oh my
you.
God!
And I thought, oh God, here we go. He's just, oh, you're that young one, you're that, and he went, no, do you not remember? Did he slip? And I was like, oh, I do remember. What did you vote? And he went, I voted yes. I was like, yes! Yes, one down.
Okay. Okay, so it was a spontaneous thing?
So when we lost the referendum, it was like a death. Like, I can't explain to you, it was a period of mourning. Like, it was horrible. God. And it eventually got to a point where I just thought to myself, do you know what? We have not knocked our pan in for the last 3 years just to be told, everyone go back into your box. That's it, just go back to the...
That's how it felt in England. It was like, totally. Scotland voted no. It was close. There are people who are completely heartbroken. And there are people who are energised that want to make this happen. Mm-hmm. But everyone in England was a little bit like, okay, well, cool, I'm glad that happened.
You stayed.
Good for you guys.
Yeah, yeah, we're still a family. Woo. Yep.
But
Mum
not,
and Dad
haven't
divorced.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But no, it was... Because it was also, like, I remember during the referendum campaign saying to people, look, like I explained to you earlier, the reason I'm into independence is because I want to be able to vote out a government, and that's why I don't think this union works, because regardless of what Scotland votes, we get whatever England voted for, and that's not a union of equals fundamentally. So at that point I thought, oh, we need to keep the pressure on, we need to keep changing things,
momentum.
Yeah. And then the people I'd been campaigning with were saying to me, you should put your name forward. And I was going, don't be stupid, I'm 20, what are you talking about? I'm not even finished uni. And then the more and more I was talking to people, and they were like, no, argue it out with me. Do you think Parliament should represent society? Yes. Should it include all walks of life then? Yes. Should it include young people? Well, my God, I think you're right. Jesus, you're onto something. And then it became this, look, if you have got the arguments and you've really sat and thought through things, then say it. Have the confidence. That's what discussion is. That's what politics is. So just because you're 20 doesn't matter. Can you hold your own? If you can, go for it.
Do you live to argue? Yes.
So that was... I ended up putting my name forward, and then...
Well, this is the thing. I've had people reach out to me before and say, I want to become an MP. Can you do an episode on that, for example? Because I do these kind of explaining politics episodes. And I would be completely ill-equipped to do that because I don't know. So what is the process? Who did you have to persuade to put you on the ballot?
So it's different for different political parties. So like, see for instance with the Tories just now, with this leadership election, you see them always talking about how many letters have gone into the 1922 committee. That's the concern.
I love that you talked about a leadership election that isn't happening.
I know, but...
Are you willing it to happen?
Folk have been sending in letters for like 3 months, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll know when we hit the threshold, but that's their process. Whereas with SNP, it's one member, one vote. So what happens is you're coming up to an election, if you're an SNP member, you can put your name forward to be the candidate in a particular area. And then there will be a hustings for all the members of that particular area. And at the end of that, the members vote who they want to be the candidate.
So it's an in-person thing?
Yeah.
You
have debates, meetings.
So you had other people that wanted to be the SNP candidate that you had to go up against and say why you'd be better.
There was one guy, Ian, was up against me. Yeah. I don't know what he's doing with himself now, actually.
And did you just... Did you not have to, like... How did you get even into that?
That was purely just the people in the party going, you should put your name forward.
And you just
I don't know what that
And you send
means.
Your name into an email?
And they were
like...
saying, look, right, here's the... You need to get on the approved candidate list.
Right.
So you had to go through vetting with the SNP. So I went through
vetting.
What
does that include? They check if there's any dodgy tweets. Right.
Are you a drug addict? Are you... Have you ever laundered money? Have you... Just basically finding out, like, do you know party policy? How would you handle this situation if you were in a...
So it's a bit like a job interview.
Basically, it's the longest job interview I'll ever have.
How long was it?
I think it started maybe about, if I remember rightly, November or December, the selection process, because we lost the referendum in September. November and December was folk putting their names in, going through vetting and everything. And then I think it was January, maybe, that I found out the members have elected you as the candidate. So then I became the SNP candidate for that election.
And that's when the story starts, because then you've got a campaign to actually win the thing. Yeah. What was that like, trying to get... Because that seat you took
it was
from
mad.
Labour, you took it from the shadow Foreign Secretary?
Foreign Secretary of Defence, something like that.
That's quite a big deal.
I know it was.
The shadow cabinet.
It was wild. I remember when it was the Lord Ashcroft poll came out, and it was like the political elites went, this is the poll to watch. And he came out and had like SNP just winning everything, my seat, everything. And we were like, oh my God.
So you thought I could. So when you went for it, you kind of thought, there's no way I'm actually going to win.
No. No, I didn't. I didn't think I was going to win, but not to the point that I thought, I don't want to win this, I'm just going to run. I was running going, I'm going to make you work for this, pal. If you want to get re-elected, you're going to have to win votes off of me, sunshine, not the other way about. And that was it.
And
just
was a part of you kind of...
And that was it.
And was a part of you kind of going to sleep at night going, God, I know I shouldn't hope this because it might not happen, but I really want to win. And I'm imagining myself winning.
Do you know, see, when I answer this now, I sound like such a liar, right? But hand on heart, it's all I remember is I was too busy focused on day to day. Just like I had my list of things I had to do because I was still at uni as well. Like I had to.
Right, you're in your final year of uni.
So I had to factor in.
Weird.
Campaigning and hustings and all that around my uni classes and exams and everything. So, like, I was just
running.
That
is mad that you were doing that in your final year.
When I say it out loud now, I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, so it was just day to day. So I didn't have the time to sit and pontificate of if I was ever the Member of Parliament for. I was just like, no, this is, say what you think, keep going, just be yourself, whatever happens, happens.
And then when that poll came out and it was like, you know, Paisley and Renfrewshire South, that's your seat, it looks like it's going to go SNP. Was that when it all started to get real? Like, oh my God, I might win. I might be an MP at 20.
I remember in the campaigning rooms at Lord Ashcroft, and the poll itself didn't freak me out. It was everyone else's reaction to the poll that freaked me out. Because they were all like, oh, so excited, like shaking, going, we can't believe this, oh my God. And I was like, can you calm down? You're really starting to give me anxiety. Like, stop. So I knew, I was like, something's happening in Scotland. We'll see what happens. Like, let's get to election night. Because I honestly do believe nothing matters up until election night. And for all you can try your hardest and everything, it is. That's the only bit that matters. So it got to election night and I get advised to stay away from the count because it was just a media frenzy.
Advised by who?
The party and the media team says to me, look, this is just going to be non-stop. Because you need to realise CNN had been in Paisley, Fox News had been in interviewing me, Spanish media had sent over crews to come and film me in this like that shack in the middle of Paisley that we called a campaign hump, sitting there with our coats on because there's no heating and getting interviewed and everything. Yes, I'm taking on the Shadow Forest Secretary and I mean it. You know, it was ridiculous. And so it got to the night and my dad was my election agent. And so he went with my family.
What does that mean, an election agent?
They're like, so you're the candidate. An election agent is basically the one who gets everything done, like getting all your documents in, making sure your leaflets are out on time, making sure the post office has got the correct spec for whatever your leaflet is, making sure that you've got all the right codes for getting your election address out, like just all the
admin,
the stuff that actually matters.
Yeah.
I was just there to argue. Like, it was my dad running about daft, trying to do everything. So they went to the count, and it got to, like, I was in the house myself, and I thought, I can't watch anything. So I just shoved on the Big Bang Theory on E4.
God, so you spent election night in 2015
just watching Big Bang Theory? Because I was like, I need to just...
Were you drinking?
Tune out. No, I wasn't doing any of that. But it got to 1 o'clock in the morning. No, tell a lie, it was about 11. And my dad phoned me and I was like, right, how's it looking? Because they're watching the count. Like, and you can actually get a good idea just if you've got the right formula for putting in the average of votes that you get. And
yeah.
You can predict how it's going.
And there's the exit polls, so you're already starting to get...
I'd say, so I was like, right, how's it looking? And my dad was like, oh, it's close, Mary, it's close. I was like, oh, Jesus, right, okay. So I went away and I was just practicing my losing speech over and over because I just knew I can't sound sarcastic when I lose. Like, that was my worry, that I would sound like I was just being so sarcastic to Douglas. So
right.
I was really practicing trying to sound genuine and sincere and all that. And I had the winning one, that was fine, but it's the losing one going. And my dad came to pick me up. And we get in the car and he's like, they're going to declare soon. So this is about 1:30 in the morning. And in the car, we get into the place. And I'm like, how is it looking? And my brother's going, oh, it's close, Mary, it's close.
Oh, my God.
Get into the count. And what they do is they take you behind like this, the candidate and the election agent, they take you behind this curtain and they tell you the result before you go out on the telly, the bit that you see.
Oh, okay.
Declared, just in case somebody greets or faints or something, right? Just gives them a bit of time to compose themselves. So we're all standing behind there, and this was the first I had seen Douglas Alexander in person, because he refused to debate me at any time. Fair
goes. Maybe for him it was a bit...
If I was him...
humiliating, like, this young...
Totally,
you know,
totally.
I don't want to...
Totally. But, so we're standing there, and she's going through, announced, right, Douglas Alexander, and my dad just whispered in my ear, and he went, pal, I've been lying to you all night, you're thousands ahead.
Oh my God!
And I went, what? Dad, I've only been practicing my losing speech. Oh, Jesus. So, see, when that winning speech that got broadcast on the telly, that was the first time I was reading that bloody speech. Just stunned. Like, so.
Wow. So you really didn't, so that surprise was genuine.
Because I didn't want to buy into my own hype, so to speak.
Yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? That's everyone's biggest downfall is... believing everything about themselves
yeah.
that other people say about them.
Especially in politics. Yeah. So when you won,
yeah.
what happened? I mean, I guess you celebrated straight after, but then what? Like, did you get an email? Are you inducted?
So what happens is you get given an envelope, a House of Commons envelope, and inside it, it's got... And now I'm saying this off the top of my head. This is when my memory starts to become quite a blur. Because by this point, it's
7 years ago.
It wasn't even that. It was 2:30 in the morning, and I was like, I haven't slept in 24 hours, and everybody wants to interview me, and I'm not that interested. What is going on, Dad? So it was. You get the letter and everything, just telling you, look, you need to be there on Monday, essentially. So it ended up. I was like, right, how does this work? So I got in touch with some of the SNP MPs who'd already been here, and I was like, how do you get to London? And they're like, look, phone this, the travel office, just talk to them. And the travel office were great. They
knew what to do.
oh, so you don't know anything? I was like, I don't know anything. Like, fine, I'll book you on a flight. So me and Yanis in the travel office, we're still besties. I'm like, you've got me home every week, so well done.
So they book your flights?
Yeah, you can phone up and they'll do it for it. You.
No money comes out of your pocket, you don't have to like get receipts.
Goes through the IPSA account. In IPSA have a, what do you call it? Like a ceiling. There's a cap on travel.
So you can't get first class or anything?
If you want to get first class, you need to pay above it. But with Scottish trains, this is one of the weird things, is that sometimes it works out that if you get on a train at the last minute, the first class ticket is cheaper than the standard ticket.
Yeah, I've heard that before, yeah.
See, no, trying to explain that to the public. The minute expenses come out and they see first class, hit the roof.
Especially for you.
Which is understandable.
Like you put yourself out there as like, I want to represent the people who don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. And so if you're even seen to have like accepted the smallest luxury, do you not feel like it's even worse? You just can't marry.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. But it's never crossed my mind, though. Because I'd went from working in a chip shop to being here, I was like, I've not got this sort of prestige and... What's the word?
You don't even know the word.
No, it's like, people have got this... Look, if you've been in Parliament for long enough, you start to believe you are more important than other people. Because you're treated more important than other people, because you only exist inside this building. And I just so determined never to be that. Mm-hmm. Like, this bubble, I get it, it's a place of work. Every place of work has its own environment and its own issues and things, but that cannot get away from letting me do my job. Mm-hmm. And my job is to argue with folk and argue on behalf of all these folk that voted for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's truly as simple as that. And it's when people start to complicate it. I'm like, you're in this for you.
But you really have... I mean, I remember when you got elected, you kind of stormed onto the scene and you seem to have no filter and very little patience for how Westminster operated immediately. Mm-hmm. And from that, it just looked like you weren't intimidated at all, despite the fact that you were often addressing, you know, much older and, with the greatest respect, more fundamentally experienced people who had way higher profiles than you, who had globally high profiles. Mm-hmm. Were you intimidated and you just didn't let it show, or are you just like that?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I was intimidated. In the sense that I was constantly aware, you're a 20-year-old bam who has got into Parliament. I know you've done everything by the book.
Is this a spoof or is this
never
real?
Forget who you are. Like, okay. Just because you're on green benches does not change this. And like, and because I was also... God, it sounds like I'm sort of tooting my own horn here, but because I also... I don't think I've got an ego in politics. Like,
But that doesn't affect you being intimidated.
Do you know what it is? Right, it was something I nearly said to you downstairs. See, one of the most exciting things for me, genuinely, just a person, never mind politician, is getting proved wrong. See if I can get into a conversation with somebody and someone genuinely clamps me and I don't have anything to say to them, I love it, because I'm like, I've learned something. You've opened my mind a wee bit. I've got things to think about now. And that's just always been my approach. If you say something that I can't answer, I need to do a bit more work on my position. Mm-hmm. Or I need to change it.
Right.
So to me, that's just dead simple. But that is not the logic of a lot of politicians in here. You know, it's all about... it's ego. It's about appearing good. It's about coming off well for the cameras. And
so was it a kind of assurance in yourself, like, I really think I have a point here, and so I'm not that intimidated by you because I think I'm right?
See, it's like, whenever I go to do a debate, I have to engross myself in everything to do with it. Because the only way I can get up and stand in Parliament and talk the way I do is because, and not in an arrogant way, but because I genuinely can go, I know everything about this. Ask me anything. I have done my homework. Mm-hmm. if you have, what is your concern? If I can answer that, I'm going to. Like, to me, that's how prepared you should be for every debate.
But the preparation isn't all of it for me. It's the, just someone's prestige. If I've seen someone on telly a lot, and then I meet them in person, something happens to me. I clam up a bit and I feel a bit nervous. It's just natural. It's, you're speaking to me as if it's really obvious what you're saying. I think it's quite rare to not be intimidated.
This is the thing, because like in some, so in that sense, like standing in the Commons arguing with David Cameron doesn't faze me. I'm like, I know why I'm here. People have put me here, and I've thought about this harder than you have. Come at me. I can debate this. But see, like, in 2017, I went to do my surgeries in Johnston Town Hall, and we arrived there, and have you ever heard of The Singing Kettle?
Is it a TV show for kids?
Yes.
Yes.
Right, spout handle, lid of metal.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Loved, absolutely loved Singing Kettle. I went into this to do my surgeries, and The Singing Kettle were in, and I have never clammed up so hard. I've got a picture with Gary from The Singing Kettle, the one with the big trombone, and I'm like, beside him.
Wait, just, why did they come into your MP?
No, they were in the town hall doing some other event.
They were making a complaint about potholes.
I was just walking into the room and I was like, here's Gary with a trombone. Oh my God. And immediately I was starstruck.
So the celebrity thing you get what I'm trying to say.
Oh no, I totally get that. I don't get it with
politicians. It's almost like you're just so angry that the intimidation, maybe there is a bit of it there, but it's clouded, it's eclipsed by, I have a mission.
Yeah, because politicians aren't celebrities. You're doing
yes,
a
they
job.
Are. Yes, they are.
They're treated as such, but that's one of my problems with politics, is I don't care who you are, I'm interested in the substance of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's part of what's wrong with Westminster, like I was talking about with the chamber being a theatre. Yeah, we all get our 4-minute clips out of it, but when's the last time there's been an actual genuine debate in that place where somebody on either side has changed their mind? Because in my experience, everybody goes into that chamber and they know what they think and how they think.
That's a good point. Is that a thing that ever happens where, you know, you might stand up and say something and then someone says, you know, I disagree and here's why, and then you stand up and say, actually, you're right, I didn't think about that.
Never seen it. Never once seen it. Which so blows my mind, because I would do that in a heartbeat.
So would... Although, have you ever?
I haven't, no. Because I've done my homework.
So this is Mario saying she's never been proved wrong. So you're basically saying that the House of Commons is a big theatre and nothing really that gets
televised.
The
chamber itself, yes. See, like, MPs in their offices, they'll be doing real work. Mm-hmm. They will be phoning, speaking to constituents, they will be sending emails to the DWP, they will be getting in touch with the Home Office to chase up that case that they got in touch with them about 2 weeks ago or whatever. That's where the real work happens that people don't see. Mm. And yet we've managed to create this sort of norm where if I don't see you on the telly, you're not doing your job, which is rubbish. Like,
I know what you mean. When I see an MP pose a question or draw attention to an issue, because that's all we get.
Mm.
And it's Twitter and it's that, yep. Right? I don't know about all the bits and bobs you're doing behind the scenes. I don't know about the admin. I don't know about how much you're reading. And I do sometimes think, I remember specifically when the Brexit deal was being passed,
mm-hmm.
I remember sort of pondering how many of these MPs have read it all. Read it cover to cover.
I doubt there would be that many.
Because there's over 1,000 pages of just text. And some of it is about...
And it's dry.
It's
so
killer.
Dry. Yep.
But you've read it, have you?
Because I'm a political geek. That's my gig. Lock me in a room with a document and give me 2 hours to pick it apart. That's me, I'm sorted.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Talk to me about the dynamic of this place. Mm-hmm. Katie on Instagram wanted me to ask, are there cliques in Westminster? It seems hostile when you watch it on PMQs. It seems like you're all in your tribes, and it's actually... I feel like as soon as you all leave, it must be fucking horrible. Everyone just, like, staring at each other.
Yeah.
But as soon as you leave the chamber, is it much more civilised, or is it high school?
I think it's more high school on steroids, right? Because, like high school in the sense that there's people you'll get on with where you're kind of on the same wavelength, and you can realise we get each other's worlds, we disagree, but we're on the same...
And so people from different parties, you are pally.
Like, you kind of get, like, we're doing a job. So, like, there's been instances where, like, say before a committee, a member will have said to me, by the way, I'm going to vote against that, just so you know, in advance. And I'll be like, I think you're wrong, but cool. Thanks for letting me know. Can I, like, that's just a wee bit of human decency.
Okay.
But it's not the norm. Like, it's so cliquey, not just party political, but then within the parties, you get cliques, and it's just...
Ah.
It's, that's humans, isn't it?
So it is what we see, and we, you know, you, for instance, in the Conservative Party, you know that there's those cliques.
Oh, totally.
And they're so easy to differentiate. And you're saying that, see when you see those on the telly, and see when you read about those, they reflect in the social scene as well, like people hang out with the people that they agree with.
Yeah, but there are instances where people hang out with folk they disagree with. And I think that's... I get it, it's just not my cup of tea, if you know what I mean.
Like, so you don't have any unlikely allies? Like, you don't, there isn't, like, a raging Conservative that you're pally with that would shock everyone?
Well... Pally with is a bit strong. Like, no, I can hold a conversation with anybody.
No, but I'm saying, are you mates with anyone from a party that, you know, you fundamentally disagree with? Really?
Nah. But I'm not really down here to get mates. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like I said to you earlier on, I'm working, and then when I'm done, I'm knackered. I want to go back to my flat.
I did notice that when we went for a drink outside, there was loads of really famous... I'd say famous, that's the wrong word, but like... There was loads of well-known MPs.
Yeah.
And you just stormed past them all. I didn't notice, you just didn't even give it. And you said hi to every single staff member, every single doorman, every single caterer, every single bartender. But then we walked past, like, Angela Rayner. Couldn't have given two fucks. You just stormed past.
She's getting about her business, I'm getting about mine.
That's I was kind of hoping, there was a couple of people, I was kind of hoping that you would stop and chat to them so then I could, like, get into the scoop. Like, no. Couldn't be less interested.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's a point.
Yeah, you do. You're the least, like, least helpful person for me to hang out with if I want to make mentions. And then just the other thing, this is just a curiosity thing for me. All that shouting that happens in the House of Commons and the speaker's constantly having to say, you know, order, order, all the time. Is that pantomime? Is that people wanting to appear angry?
Yes.
Or is it...
Yes.
So absolutely. It's not an authentic... If cameras weren't there, you don't think people would be shouting like that?
Oh, well, if cameras weren't there, I think it's... That mentality is so ingrained in this place that it probably would still happen, even if the cameras were gone. But I don't think it's a natural thing. It's definitely taught in Westminster. Like, I vividly remember when I was first in the chamber and, like, my colleagues are making speeches. No benches are packed. When they would sit down, there would be silence because all of us are normal people who don't make a racket. Like, we're just waiting on the next speaker. We all know what's happening
you,
here.
Harry, you mouth but your then, abuse. Then, you mouth it.
So then we started to realise, oh, wait a minute, etiquette isn't a thing in here. Like, I remember being so, like, shocked at how... Nobody was paying attention in the chamber. They were all on their phones. They were all on their iPads. They were all checking Twitter. They were all doing emails. And I was like, she's talking. Could you put that down, please? But fast forward 7 years, I now understand the mentality of this place. Too right, I'm checking my phone. Like, while he's talking. So it's got its
so
own mentality.
So while Boris Johnson is addressing the House, are you checking your phone?
Sometimes if it gets dull. Because, like, you can tell where things are going. You start to get into the flow of things.
So I love that you're like, I'm never going to let this place affect my behaviour, my principles. Actually,
totally does. Okay. Because the reality is also, I stuck to my guns and went, I am going to be mannerly. I will listen to every single debate. I would be the only person doing it and I would not get any benefit out of it whatsoever other than slowly destroying my mental health.
You're not doing that anyway.
Well, yes, but at least it's at a slower pace now. Like, I can break it up with checking what's happening on Reddit. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's see if my Twitter's blown up today. Oh, right.
In Parliament, do you have to call each other... I'm just trying to get my head around the etiquette. Yeah. Do you have to call each other the Honourable Lady, the Honourable... What if you don't think they're honourable? Can you still not say that? Or do you still have to say that?
This is where, again, Parliament to me falls far too short, in that we actually don't have a rule book. You'll hear the Speaker refer to Erskine May, which is a book about that fact, right? And it was published...
Erskine May.
Erskine May, and it was published in 18-something-something. And it has basically got the etiquettes of Parliament. So it's all based on this very gentlemanly, Victorian-style, what becomes the norm kind of thing. Like, in this place, we do not call each other liars. We do not do that. That's the grave sin. I'm like, but what if he's lying? It doesn't matter. Because surely, and you need to picture me with the top hat in the 1800s going, but surely common sense would tell you that if such a crook was in power, surely every sane person would remove them from power. And you're like, that might have worked in 1870, but now... No, turns out the crook can be in charge and common sense is nowhere to be seen. So what do you do now?
Because this is a thing, right? Being called a liar or even saying or implying that someone has lied, mm-hmm. it goes against... I wondered if it was a rule or it's just etiquette. Because you're right, Ian Blackford, the leader of your party, got in trouble with the Speaker recently for calling Boris Johnson a liar.
Yep.
And he... Lindsay Hoyle basically said, if you don't take it back, I'm going to kick you out.
And he didn't take it back. So you get papped out.
So you got papped out.
Yeah.
So, but you're saying it's actually more of an etiquette than it is a kind of written law.
Yeah, no,
right?
Totally.
It's just about, but everyone really cares about the etiquette.
Everything runs, like, so there's two things. Everything is based on precedent, right? So it's basically make it up as you go. If you get away with it, good, you're the new norm. So there's that. Okay. And then the second aspect is this etiquette is at the discretion of the Speaker. So even if you compare Lindsay Hoyle to John Bercow, the two of them are reading from the same Erskine May, but they had very different
approaches
to it. So like, you can't underestimate the power of the Speaker, which in itself, I'm like, there are so many problems with this.
It's interesting, you've got this one person who's facilitating, because that's really the...
That's the House of Lords. I told you. Bells. Literal bells.
What does that mean?
It means that Parliament has closed for the day. Like, the chamber has stopped.
Gosh, that's late.
So they're called division bells. Oh, no, usually on a Monday we're in till later. This is one of the rare occasions where we haven't had votes today. Usually we have votes at 10 o'clock, which runs into 11, half 11.
Wow. Kind of thing.
And then back in tomorrow morning.
Wow. Okay, getting into your life as an MP.
Yes.
What's your salary?
Oh, Christ, it's 85,000, I think. 84,000. Because it got to a point where I was like, I can't even.
I thought it was 81,
anymore.
But I don't know.
It's 80
you
something.
You should know, Mary.
I should know, it's I should money. Know. But that also didn't. Like, I've always said for the start, I don't keep it all. Like, I just don't. And
what did you do with that?
I just get the fuck who need that. That's what I mean. Like, but I've always been very clear though as well that, like, none of your business. Like, it's my paycheck.
But
I'm
it's not because you're a publicly elected person. It's my business.
So is a nurse, publicly funded. Doesn't it mean
but
you get a scene which you spend your money on?
Incredibly less than
yes,
you.
Yes, they do. Which is why I have no problem saying I don't keep all my wage.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just, that's, because it's very weird going from working in a chip shop to suddenly checking your bank account and going, whoa!
I was going to say, because like,
whoa,
after tax,
what?
You're taking a good few grand a month, and you were on when you were 19, 20, working in a fish and chip shop.
Yeah, and I was getting paid less than minimum wage.
Right.
I was getting £5.
So have you, like, enjoyed the money a bit?
Oh, of course. Like, right. I mean, in the sense that, like, not having to worry as much as you normally would. Like, who wouldn't like that?
That's not what I meant. I meant, like, do you go to Chanel? Do you go to Louis Vuitton?
No. God almighty. No chance. No, I've got... I treated myself to... When I got my first wage, I treated myself to a guitar that I bought in Camden, and that's the one I've still got in my flat.
Nice.
Just to kill time. That was enough. I was like, that's you, you've spoiled yourself. Just take your guitar and that's that.
So no.
Okay. Expenses. What do you get? And how much are we talking? And how does it work? Because like you said, with flights and travel, you just don't even feel it. You just tell them, I want to go home tomorrow. Can you sort it?
So there was the big scandal with the expenses with the politicians, mm-hmm. and they introduced the Independent Parliamentary Standards Authority, which is called IPSA. So they are totally separate from Parliament. Like, they're an independent body, and they set the rules for how much we get expense-wise and stuff, so that MPs don't vote on that themselves anymore. It's
makes
IPSA
sense.
Decide it.
Yeah.
In saying that, IPSA are very flawed at times, in that we get pay rises when nobody else has got pay rises. And although technically they're going, oh no, but inflation has went, and you're like, yeah, that's great, but if you're not giving it to the nurses, then why are we getting it? And it leaves us in an awkward situation.
Right.
And that's how I've always said, like, all the pay rises, I don't take them, just so give them to folk who need it, kind of
right.
thing. But what you've got is IPSA give you different budgets. So you've got your office budget, you've got your travel budget, and you've got your accommodation budget. So your office budget, what comes out is Mary Black has claimed X amount on expenses. It's not me claiming it, it's IPSA paying my staff. So you might have Mary Black has claimed 158,000, but what they're not realising is, yeah, but that 158,000 is paying for rent of an office and the salaries of 5 members of staff. Like,
rent of an office, obviously not this one that we're
yeah,
in
no,
now,
like,
the one in Paisley.
Aye, in the constituency.
And the staff are obviously on wages, they're on a salary.
That comes under my budget.
But you don't dictate how much they earn. It's a set amount, or do you?
Well, it is a set amount, but like, you get a set amount for your staff budget.
Okay.
And you get to decide what you do with it.
Ah.
So, like, with my staff budget, once we've got everything planned, like, my office manager's brilliant in that we do everything we need to do and we keep a wee bit for a rainy day in case anything goes wrong. And once we get to the end of a year, if we realise we're not going to need that, right, give everybody a bonus or something.
Right, okay.
They deserve it.
Yes,
just
yes.
Do it. But just because I do that, I don't know what other MPs' offices do. It's like each MP.
If any MP listens to this, I'm like, shit, my staff. I spent a lot of painting for my office.
The way this place works is it's like every MP's office is kind of treated like a private business,
mm-hmm.
in a sense that that's your budget.
Ah, so you get your office budget, your travel budget, and your what?
Accommodation.
Talk to me about the accommodation.
So, like, you get, God, the most up-to-date figure. Right, just say hypothetically, IPSA might say, if you can find a flat that costs less than 350 quid a week, we'll pay for it. If it costs over that, you need to pay the extra.
So your flat in London, I won't disclose where it is, you don't pay for that. They pay for it.
Aye, no, it comes through the accommodation, but it's that's they said to us, like, you need to find a place.
And did you find
that.
A place that's below the threshold?
Oh,
is it a lot below the threshold? Because 350
yes.
quid a week is no, what's that? What a month?
I'm saying that off the top of my head. I can't remember if that
that's
actually
okay.
is a figure.
But it's enough for it to be quite a nice place.
I know, and it also depends. Like, see, if you're an MP and you have children, your accommodation budget will be slightly higher than someone who doesn't have
that
children.
That makes sense. So you've got like a £1,600, £1,700?
Thereabouts. Yeah. Thereabouts.
That'll
so,
do.
I know.
That'll do.
Mental. But the thing that I found, or that I remember really striking me when I got my flat, was that for the price of my flat for 1 week, you could rent a 2-bedroom in Glasgow for a month.
How many people work for you?
Max, Dale. Oh, Tony, Carrie, Jared, six. Six, what am I from there?
And you're an MP, have you got another title? It's representative or something?
No, I'm just MP for Paisley and Renfrewshire South.
But wasn't there a thing that you do?
Oh, are you thinking the Shadow Scotland thing?
What am I thinking? It's your other thing?
It's Scottish, it's like, you know how there's a Scottish secretary?
Right.
And then you've got Labour's version of the Scottish Secretary. I'm SNP's version of the Scottish Secretary.
That sounds quite important. Okay.
I've told you how this place treats Scotland. We don't matter. It's half an hour questions once every 6 weeks. They can cope with it.
Okay. So you've got six staff members and you're just like, with the greatest respect, just like a random FP.
Totally.
Okay.
But that's, again...
And, that's and they earn, like, comfortable salaries.
Yeah, oh, I know.
And what, are they all busy?
Yes. God, aye. Because our office actually had... See, because my face was put everywhere in 2015, mm-hmm. my office was inundated, like, beyond belief, from all over the world, never mind the UK. Mm-hmm. I had folk in China offering to deliver a crane, like a construction crane.
For what purpose?
Just cause. You're an MP, we'd like to gift you this crane. Mum, happy birthday.
I would be like, so got you. Corruptible in your honestly, position.
Just,
I'd be like, give me the crane.
So
they are all answering emails, right? That's like a big part of the job.
Basically, they're the ones who do all the work that I get the credit for. Like, they're the ones who are going and chasing up phone calls and making sure they've got the right forms off of constituents and sitting and listening to a constituent for an hour knowing we only needed 10 minutes.
And you're going to get that bullet point.
Yeah.
How did they get their jobs? Did you interview and recruit them?
Yes. It was more... So, like, my office manager, she was really active campaigner and everything during the referendum and stuff.
So it was a natural thing? Like,
yeah, like, she was pivotal in me standing, and then I was like, you know what you're doing, help. So she was the office manager, and I've told you about my friend, who I was like, I need you to help me with this. Mon, you understand my brain, let's go. And he came.
What was he doing before?
Working KFC.
So it's like a tribe of fast food workers. Excellent. So you've kind of built your own group.
Yeah, totally. I owe them everything. Like, I've had the best team ever.
How old are they all? What's the average age?
Everyone's older than me.
Oh my god.
Which isn't hard. Yeah,
they know
like
how to do the
young.
Adulting while you faff around with your scraps of paper that you read your speeches from in Parliament, which, see you next time you stand up, just as a little, like, love letter to me, please will you read your speech from just something that doesn't resemble an old homeless person's face.
You need to understand.
It's like it's back of a fag packet. Mary, honestly, I know how I feel about you. You have to behave with the scraps of paper. In fact, I'm going to buy you an
But the other problem, though, is that see if it's an A4 bit, it gets too big and my hands get caught in it and I start hitting it and stuff.
Because you gesticulate so much.
So, smaller the paper, that's it, it's just there.
So then let's get you an A5, we'll talk about it after. There's a gift shop downstairs. In fact, that would be perfect. You hate Westminster politics, so I'll get you a Westminster Commons book.
Here's a nugget, right, see this printer? Mm. 7 years I've had this. It has never worked. Honest to God, never worked.
That's
so
all printers.
Half of the reason that I look such a mess before a speech is because I've been legging it along to the library trying to find a printer that's hooked up to a computer that I can sign in on, email myself my speech so that I can open it and then print it.
Really?
And, oh my God, 7 years. Still not fixed.
Wow, that's a good bit of trivia. So next time I see you with a janky bit of paper, I'll think, oh, she's had a hard time printing.
Thank you.
I'm still
going to
buy your notebook. Okay, proportionately, how much time do you divvy up between your constituency in Paisley and Renfrewshire South mm-hmm. and London?
Well,
if it was a pie chart.
So usually the way it works is down in London, first thing on a Monday, and if you're lucky, back home on a Wednesday night. So that kind of gives you Thursday and Friday to play with. Thursdays, you can often end up stuck here. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of give and take. But Friday's really your only guaranteed day, like working day in the constituency.
Wow, is that it?
And because we are so far away, inevitably that means you need to start doing stuff at the weekends. But if you keep doing that, you don't get a day off.
Like, bit of a life,
and I realised that about 4 months in, I was like, oh, right, I need to stop feeling bad about having a long lie on a Saturday. Like, right, okay, if that's the only human thing I get this week, I will be okay with that, a long lie. So you've got to make the time for these sort of things.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I did learn
And that you're right, actually, it's kind of unfair because if you're like Keir Starmer's constituency is Holborn, mm-hmm. central London. So for him to visit his constituency, he can walk.
Lots of MPs live in
Boris
London.
Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn, they're all London MPs.
Or even that.
But for you, you have to fly.
I've now, because I'm environmentally aware, I've started getting the train for a while. But oh my God, like 5 hours
in your life. But it eats into your personal life. Because that's the thing, you've got a partner, she lives in Glasgow. And you can't possibly spend that much time with her. Like, realistically?
Well, you've got to make an effort. Like, it's definitely... She's got the patience of a saint when it comes to my job. Like, she'll understand something has happened last night, so tomorrow's plans are out the window kind of thing.
Wow.
So she gets that, but...
Did she meet you when you were already an MP, or have you been together for this whole time?
I had been an MP for, was it 7 months? 8 months? Something like that.
So she knew the deal.
She knew the deal. Although she didn't fully appreciate it until like we were properly together and I brought her down here and she was like, oh my God, this is horrible. I don't like this place. No wonder you're sad. And I'm like, I know.
So. No wonder you're sad. So. It's a rite of passage as a politician. Okay, can I ask you like kind of a philosophical question?
Yep.
Do you feel powerful?
Ooh. In what sense?
Like, do you feel you can genuinely make big changes within your capacity as an MP? If you want to do something, you can fucking do it.
I kind of split political success into two categories, where there's one which is totally tangible. You can go, I got this made into law. I got this passed. In that sense, I've never managed to do anything like that because it's always been voted down. But
right.
So in that sense, no, I don't have power, and I feel very powerless in this place. But to the flip side of that, I am totally aware of my position, and I know that I can influence people in different ways, and where it might not be as obvious or as concrete as going, look at this bit of paper, I did that. If I can, and I know because I've met them, if I can meet one person and they go, you made my life a bit, like, so I felt less alone knowing... Like listening to you talking, that's power.
Right, so it's like a cultural power more than it is a legitimate,
like a tangible.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
But surely, as an MP of a constituency, you are able to make changes in Paisley and in Renfrewshire.
No, in that sense, it is. But because of devolution, we're also really limited in that a lot of the things that are directly to do with my remit in Westminster are all reserved. So it's DWP, it's Foreign Affairs, it's, your visa applications.
Because your area also has...
An MSP,
so a member of the Scottish Parliament.
If you get a housing problem or whatever, you're better going to them rather than me, if you see what I mean. So in that sense... I'm still powerless in my constituency because I've got all these people.
You're a glorified middleman.
Honestly, that is exactly what I am. And I feel like one, and it's
so actually, fundamentally, you know, if it was a scale, like if one was, I'm so fucking powerless, what's the point? And 10 was, oh my God, I can, you know, do anything with a magic wand. Where are you on that scale? Do you feel?
Probably about a 6.
Oh my God, that's high.
I'd say a 6. I'd say a 5 initially, because I'm like, because it's potluck, you've got a chance, you never know what's going to happen, so you just need to try. If the change happens, brilliant. If it doesn't, you tried. And for that positive attitude, I gave myself an extra digit, so I'm a 6.
Okay. And I wonder if you've got higher designs as well.
Higher designs?
Yeah, like, you know, you are an MP now. Who knows what's going to happen with Scottish independence? So, what, Nicola Sturgeon's job, party leader of the SNP, First Minister of Scotland, that job doesn't interest you at all?
Nope. I like my life. Thank you. 2015 was too much of an insight into what Nicola Sturgeon's life must be like, and nope.
So you want privacy?
Yeah, I've always been very clear, I am a normal person, this is a job. Mm-hmm. And I'm not underestimating the importance of the job or the responsibility, but it's a job, and that's it. So I'm still going to have my life, because when I stop being an MP, I'm still going to have my life. Kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. What kind of budget do you get as an MP? In terms of a disposal budget to make changes in your constituency?
So you don't,
because we talk, you know, in the press recently, there's been this sort of controversy around conservative MPs mm-hmm. who have threatened to write in letters of no confidence, and then are you being threatened, like, oh, you want that school built? You're not getting that school built. So there are these sort of, I wondered if you had to sort of pitch for money, oh, we need a school built, can we have this money, and this is what we'll do with it.
In that sense, yes, like, you have to advocate for things. Yeah. Like, everybody and their granny is fighting for every penny that there is. Organisations, clubs, initiatives, all sorts. So if you find something that you think, this is actually really worthwhile, you need to start shouting for the rooftops about it.
Who gives you that money? If someone listens...
Well, that's what I mean, you don't get money. What I would then have to do is, if I have an idea in my constituency, I think this might really work, who do we need on board to make it happen, right? We need to have the council giving us a building. We need to have funding from the Scottish Government. Maybe if we apply to that fund, were you aware of this fund? Right, let's apply to that and see if we
do. So you're a conduit.
So you're basically a glorified signpost in many senses. And it's just how determined you are with where you're signing people.
So it is much more about influence than it is about an actual budget. Totally. Wow, I thought you got something.
No.
Nothing. Surely most of your emails from people are going like, we need money, and you're there going like, me too, hun. Join the club.
Well, actually, I've got my wage here that I can I can divvy out.
I don't want this 81 grand. You have it.
No, again, that comes back into the powerless thing, in that I'd say about 80% of our caseload is to do with people in poverty, and they're in poverty because of the government. The only way I can change that is to lobby the government to change the rules so that they can get their money. Gosh. So it's this position of going, the Tories still said no.
Right. Because I'm aware that MPs would often be on the front line if the public are unhappy with something or something's happened to politics. How many emails do you get a day, and how many of those are angry?
In a day, we can get anywhere between 350 and 2,000 emails in a day. Easy.
In a day?
Easy. Because, like, initially, this is what I was going to say earlier on, we actually thought, because my face was everywhere in 2015, that's why the caseload was so high, and eventually it would start to come down. It's been 7 years and it's never came down. Just constant, all the time. Out of that, there's... angry's the wrong word. I think you've got a slither where it's just people wanting to rant at you, which fair dues, that's what your MP's there for. Then there will be a huge chunk in the middle where they have actual problems.
Okay.
I can't access my pension. They've told me that I'm not entitled to this, but I think I am. I have been shortchanged by HMRC by however much, and they're now chasing me up for this amount kind of thing. It's very real stuff that you need to go through individually with people. And then you get other ones which are just sort of worldwide campaigny, podcasty. you know, just, can I have some of your time? Can I put this? Have you ever paid attention to this?
Excuse me, I have emailed your fucking thing, because you can't even email it. You just sent, it's like a website thing where you write in a box. I have put a thing in that box more for you than any other politician in the world.
Declan runs it, not me.
Bear in mind, I've spoken to Joe Biden, I've spoken to Andy Burnham, I've spoken to, no offence, much more important people than you.
Yeah.
And I could not care. I'm fucking replying. Don't give me that shit.
I'd say that's slither.
Okay. Couple of last questions.
Go on.
Is Scottish independence going to happen?
Yes. Don't know when, but it is. It's inevitable.
Wow. Inevitable.
Inevitable.
But it might be 20 years, it might be 5.
Aye.
Okay.
And but it's going to happen.
And if it does, what will you do? Because your current job is as an MP that represents your constituency in Scotland in Westminster, in the House of Commons here. So if you become independent, you will no longer have
a seat.
I will
be redundant.
Yes.
I will be home.
You're campaigning to make yourself redundant.
Yes.
So what's the plan for you personally?
Christ, I'm not thought that far ahead.
That's surely not true. If Scottish independence happens, surely you've got a bit of a career plan.
No. I've never, like, see, even when I was at school, the only reason I applied to uni was because my mum made me. I never expected to get in, and then I suddenly did get in, and I was like, oh, right, okay, let's go for this.
Mm.
People encouraged me to put my name forward to stand in a timely election, and I thought, oh, right, okay, you've got a point, I'll try this, and I've ended up here. Like, I don't plan, I just kind of go for what's in front of me.
Sure, your constituents would love hearing that.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? But in many ways, though, actually, I think that's quite a good thing. Like, I think constituents appreciate the fact that I've always said, I'm only going to do this job as long as I think I've got something to offer.
Mm.
Like, see folk who are in this place for, like, 30 years and all that, I don't want to be that. Not at all. I want to get in, make the change, and get out.
And then do what?
I don't know. Figure out what I want to be when I grow up. I don't know.
I think you were the baby of the house, and that's, like, the term, right? The baby of the house. And you were the first person to be as young as you were since the 1830s.
Yeah.
But now you're not the baby of the house anymore. Do you kind of feel like, oh, my identity? Like, that was my thing.
As much as you want me to say yes.
I do, when we had a drink downstairs.
Honest to God, like, I just don't. It was an annoyance. It was a stupid phrase. It'll be cleaners. It was, like, to me, it's the father of the house, the mother of the house, and the baby of the house.
Who were the father and the mother when you joined?
When I joined, it was... Oh, I can see his face.
Are these the oldest man and oldest woman? Okay.
It then became Ken Livingston after the original one passed away. Oh, his name was it Jeffrey or something? He was a Labour guy. And the mother of the house, I believe, is Harriet Harman.
Oh!
And I was the baby of the house, and folk would always say, have you spoken to the mother or the
father? I was going to say, like, what's
no,
your...
what? Why are you trying to adopt me? It was the first time I'd ever heard the phrase baby of the house. I was just like, what is this?
Was there a ceremony? Was there a custom? Did you, like, the fact that you were this baby and you were so young?
No, it was just getting signed... you do your oath, you know, when you're getting elected.
Right.
Because actually, the first time I did that, I made a mess of it. Because you say your oath and all that, and I promise not to kill the Queen and everything. And then you go out.
No way.
It's like you swear allegiance and stuff. And then you walk out behind the speaker's chair. And I was like, oh, that's. We're MPs now, we've sworn in. And I turned around to see all these desks with big forms, and they're like, you're not an MP till you sign this, and this. And I was like, sorry, my bad. Now I'm an MP. So.
And you're right in terms of when you joined, you didn't know the lingo, and there is so many customs, so many traditions. Did you just have to feel those out, or did someone sit down and explain?
No, I had to feel them out. But, like,
even voting, right? You have to walk into a different room.
Yeah,
or
you've got to walk into one of the two lobbies, and you've got 8 minutes, and then the doors get locked, and then you have to. The only way you can exit is by voting. So that's how sometimes you hear about people who accidentally walk into the wrong lobby, realise they're in the wrong lobby, the doors are locked, so they hide in the toilets.
No.
Mother of all parliaments. I've seen it happen multiple times.
Really?
Aye. And then they send the sergeant at arms in with his sword, and he's like, right.
Anyone that we would know that has voted for the wrong thing by accident?
Yes.
Who?
I'm not telling you.
You have to.
Right, who can I think? Who am I right grassing up? There's there's been a couple of occasions from my own colleagues.
Really? No fucking way. Like,
and locked themselves in the toilet. Stop.
With the Conservative Party and the DUP. Like,
at what point when you were in the corridor with Tories did it hit you?
That is crazy.
But so people are human,
all these customs, like, you, there's these physical, you have to physically walk into a thing in order to vote in favour or against a law.
Yeah.
And like, even just the little things like the lingo of how you refer to people in the Commons and all this stuff, you just had to work it out.
Yeah, that comes back to what you asked earlier, the Honourable Member.
Yeah.
The reason why you have to call someone the Honourable Member is that, see, if we're debating, I'm not debating you, Julia, as a person. I am debating you as the representative of the Honourable Member for da-da-da-da-da. So it was a Victorian etiquette, as in to try and keep things from becoming too personal. It was the Honourable Member for Paisley and Renfrew for South, da-da-da. But part of the problem that I've always struggled with that, and I've noticed actually other folk are now copying me, is that when I was making speeches, I'd go, and as the Honourable Member for, I don't know where you're from. As they said, and I'd carry on talking, and I could see the whole place going, oh my God, this is just terrible etiquette. But over the last couple of years, I've noticed that more people are going, sorry, I missed, what's your, thank you. And when you think about it, how are you going to remember 650?
I thought you just had to know. I thought you had to just clock.
See, when someone talks in the chamber, it's got their name and their the area they represent.
So there's no excuse?
There's a TV screen. What you're saying is there's a big TV screen.
With
a name and a thingy. But not in Westminster Hall. That's one thing.
But take a note, Murray. Take a note. On your janky piece of paper.
I learned the hard way.
Oh my God. I'm buying you a note.
I didn't come here to be read for filth.
At 11 o'clock on a Monday night. Okay, one last question.
Right, go on.
For anyone listening who wants to be an MP...
I'm kidding.
What would you tell them that you wish someone had told you? What would you warn them about, or what would you advise them?
I would say two things. One, do your homework. Like I said earlier on, if you're going to stand up and try and be an authoritative voice on something, then do your homework. Because otherwise you're an idiot and you're half the problem. Mm-hmm. So that's first thing. Second thing is you have to, I would warn people of the egos. Like I do, I think it's and I know you get egos in every walk of life, but it's just so disproportionate with politicians, where it's just, you're surrounded by so many people who love themselves, like absolutely adore themselves. And that becomes quite grating if you're a normal person. Do you know what I mean? Sincerely, that would probably be my two things, is know what you believe and know why you believe it, and get ready for some hard work.
Wow.
And by hard work, I mean people. That would be my two.
And bits. Do you feel like you didn't really know that before you started?
I think I was hopefully naive, in that I was thinking, oh, these are political minds. This is going to be great, sitting in a chamber debating and back and forth and really listening to, like, factual debates. And then I arrived and went, did you hear that? Oh, I heard that. That's not
because
true.
Because when we were downstairs, you said, like, people prepare their speech.
Yeah.
They speak for a couple of minutes.
They
and then they sit
they
down
put it
again.
Online and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's none of that real, genuine... Which there might have been in the Victorian times, but we're not there anymore. It's so polarised.
Would you still say, though, anyone listening who wants to become an MP, like, do it?
By God, do it. Like, the one thing that this place is crying out for is normal people. And I don't like using that word normal, because there's no such thing as normal, right? But by that, I mean people who aren't multimillionaires, people who don't have trust funds, people who have met a trans person in their life, people who have experienced things. And like, it comes back to 20 when I was going, I don't have the experience that these folk have. And it took somebody else to point out to me, well, actually, you've had more life experience in 20 years than he's had in 46 years. And I would be sitting there going, actually, I think you're right.
Right.
I've got more of a grasp on the real world than any of these sure do, because they've got 4 credit cards and 2 trust funds, and they're on the board of 3 companies and all the rest of it. And that's what we need to get away from. We need to get people who are actually affected and understand the impact of laws and to make the laws. So join, because I'm lonely. Get in. We need more normal folk, man. Get in.
Okay, Mary Black MP from her office in London. I had a really, really good time chatting to her and sort of getting to know that job. And I meant what I said there, you know, about it seemed that she knew every staff member in Parliament by face, if not by name. And she was asking how everyone was, and she seemed to know kind of bits and bobs about their lives. But when it came to other MPs, she just wasn't interested at all. So she was bang on brand as far as I'm concerned. So with that, I really hope that you gained some interesting insight from this episode. Next time you kind of watch Parliament TV or you watch clips of people arguing in the Commons, you can have that added layer of knowledge, you know, as to what goes on behind the scenes and how some of their kind of interpersonal relationships look. And you can imagine Mary Black kind of running around ignoring her colleagues and trying to find a printer that works. If you want to keep this podcast going, please become a patron. The link is in the episode description. I think I'm going to upload pretty much the whole uncut episode on there. So you'll hear cleaners coming in and out. You'll hear Mary do this big long rant about Big Ben. That was a moment. So it's a great thing, patron. Check it out. Your 3 quid means that this podcast continues to exist. So thank you in advance if you want to become a part of that community. Make sure you're following me on social media at JuliaBell_X. I'll leave Mary's details in the episode description as well. Keep in touch with me until the next one, and I'll speak to you then. Bye.